One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
A lot of this finance stuff is not actually about the maths or the dollars. It's about what it does for us and how we feel. The benefit of an advisor is that more of that return ends up in your pocket because you manage your emotions and behavior. Problem is, financial advice is so expensive in Australia. The average price of an advisor is $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year and going up very quickly. Our goal at LifeShaper was to be able to do that for under $600 a year.
Now you're in your 60s. What are some things that you would tell your younger self or even younger people listening?
If 30 is the new 20 and you're not prepared to accept that 70 is the new 60, then you have to behave differently.
You have a really interesting framework that you recommend to clients on how to set up a good budget.
Rather than being restrictive, a well-crafted plan for your money that's aligned to your values and goals is actually liberating. Stops you having to think, can I afford this? And you can just get on with living life.
Hey friends, and welcome back to the podcast. This is Queenie.
And Pablo.
Welcome back to another episode, and today we have a really, really special guest. So Vince is a financial advisor and he's helped so many people with their money, and he just has some amazing, amazing wisdom to share with us. And I'm really, really, really excited to, have him on the podcast. So welcome, Vince.
Well, thanks for having me, Queenie, and Pablo, of course.
Oh, thank you so much. So we always like to start our podcasts with a money win. So do you have a money win to share with us?
Well, my most recent money win is having turned 60, I rocked up to the gym and said, do I get a senior's discount? And he said, yes. So that saves me 25% on my gym membership.
That's amazing. That's really good. Any other senior's discounts?
I haven't quite found that out yet, but I have applied for the senior's card. But you don't get the $2.50 Opal card if you're still working. So you have to work less than 20 hours a week to get
really?
The $2.50 on the buses.
Wow.
So anywhere you want to go in Sydney, $2.50.
That's good. That's
but,
really
but
good.
You can't. You don't get it if you're working 20 hours or more.
Oh.
Which I do.
Oh. Hopefully soon.
It's okay. You still have the 25%.
At the gym.
And now you go to the gym, you can even walk to anywhere. Save even more money.
Mm. Yeah.
And I do walk. I walk a lot.
Oh, that's good. What about you, Pablo?
My money win is that it was recently Black Friday and we stocked up on some dishwashing tablets from Kmart. So they were like only $15 for 110 tablets. So that was good.
Wow, I didn't realize that Kmart did Black Friday. Everyone's getting into it now.
I know. It's gotten so big these days.
Yeah, it's very big. And actually, we were discussing during lunch before you arrived, Vince, that, you know, many retailers, they increase their price, their RRP, to increase the discount.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's pretty dodgy. So make sure that you use, I think you have the website, Queenie?
Camel.
Is that the one that tracks the prices that you can see on Amazon, how it's moved?
Yeah, exactly.
Camel.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with DuckDuck.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's so crazy. It's actually pretty dodgy, but a lot of retailers do it. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's illegal.
I know. Surely, right? But how do they check?
And, of course, nobody's checking overseas websites anyway.
Exactly. And who's enforcing these things as well? You know, probably understaffed, you know, probably one person managing everything. Yeah.
But there's always good bargains around it.
There are. And you can find good ones. My money win is, I think that it's really good. Something that we like to do is whenever we receive gifts or like Christmas gifts and things, like we always keep our wrapping paper and like birthday presents and things like that. So we don't have to buy gift bags and wrapping paper. So I think that's a bit of a money win. You know, if you get given a gift or something, it's good to have a place to store all of them. So if you want to give something to someone else, you've still got the bags ready.
But what's the hack to keep it without getting it scrunched up or lost and knowing where it is when you're going to use it?
That's the catch. I guess you have to find a little space in your home to put all the gift bags. But I hate paying for like wrapping paper or like gift bags because I know that they just like everyone has them and like they exist, you know?
Or maybe we could save more by buying a smaller house without the cupboard to store the paper.
That's true. Yeah.
Actually, something we recently started using is a label maker. things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually really good because we get to buy less, but we know where most things are. Have you used it before?
No, but that's a really good thing. I find myself going to the supermarket and going, do I have olive oil? Oh, I'll just buy one. And you end up with six bottles of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, always.
And but that's why you should always shop with a list.
Yeah.
And the Woolies app is good because it'll actually give you your list in aisle order. So you tell it which store you're going to and it resorts your list into the way you move up and down the aisles. So you don't have to think. You can just start at the left and work your way to the right.
Yeah, that's so handy. I love all this technology, making our life easier. Just remember that anything that we talk about in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't constitute personal financial advice. You can read our full financial services guide in the description below. We would also like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of our land, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. So, Vince, can you tell us a bit about how you got into the financial space? Like, what is your story and why did you choose this industry out of all of the ones that you could have chosen?
Yeah, it's actually quite a long story. I graduated as an engineer in, am I allowed to say how long ago? 1983. And that was a really deep depression. And I'd sort of worked out halfway through my uni time at uni that maybe I didn't really want to be an engineer, but I'd sort of stumbled into it because I was good at maths. So when I graduated, I started work for a consulting firm and we did a lot of work in finance. And I realized, well, I'm not sure I really like this working business. So I decided to go back and study an MBA. And while I was studying my MBA, I got a job offer in the finance department or corporate finance for Mobil Oil, the oil company, which is now called ExxonMobil. And so that got me into finance. So that was largely working on, you know, big projects, and that's how I came to Australia. So I joined them in New York and they sent me to Australia for work. So I came here for 6 weeks in 1988. However many years later it is, 35 years later, I've got a 23-year-old Aussie son and I'm here. So from that I joined Macquarie Bank and in their project finance team where we used to do a lot of things like valuing infrastructure assets for the super funds and working on a lot of big infrastructure projects and from there to funds management. And then I left in 2003 and set up my own business. So I had a business that I sold to Mark Boris in 2007. So Yellow Brick Road Investment Services used to be called Caliva Wealth when I ran it. I worked with a lot of older people with lots of money and realized that a lot of what we were doing for them was not really about getting them a better investment return. It didn't really matter to these people whether they made 8% or 8.5%. And the things that did matter to them were, we had this woman client, she was in her 80s and she had a 40-year-old boyfriend. No, she wasn't. She was in her late 70s. 40-year-old boyfriend and she had a lot of money. And she had two big obsessions. One, that the boyfriend wouldn't get the money, and two, that she could get her health card. Now, this woman was as fit as an ox, so she never went to the doctor, but she was obsessed about getting her senior, what is now called a senior's health card. And so we did a lot of work to get her that, and that was what mattered to her. So that taught me that a lot of this finance stuff is not actually about the maths or the dollars. It's about what it does for us and how we feel. And so having sold that business just before the GFC, so 2008, I was now semi-retired, I think is probably a polite way of putting it. And I thought, you know, this financial advice business isn't rocket science. There is a set of rules here somewhere that gets you most of the way there. So I spent quite a time working out what they were and documenting what we actually did as advisors. And from there, I said, well, how do I now use this to deliver financial advice to everyday Australians? As most people listening to this podcast, in fact, most Australians will know, financial advice is a very expensive thing to buy, both in Australia and around the world. And there's far more people want it than can afford it. And so using these tools, I create a Life Sherpa so that we could help the vast bulk of Australians who weren't being serviced by the traditional financial advice business. Yeah, starting with budgeting, paying off your debts, buying your first home, super insurance, investment, all those things that are becoming increasingly complicated and changing all the time. And it's really hard to make those decisions. Sure, people like you guys are doing a great job in getting this information around, but it's still not a simple decision, most of these things. Much of it is about behaviour and emotions, as it is about maths. And so that's why I created Life Shaper.
Oh, I love it. That's such a nice story. What did you think, Pablo?
Yeah, that was very interesting, especially, you know, when you mentioned like the old lady and then she had really interesting wants, you know, it's not what you think that she would want, like maybe the 1% better return is not actually what she wants.
No, and it wouldn't have made the slightest bit of difference to her life. But a lot of people in financial advice think it is about returns. That's not actually the real value that a financial advisor adds. So the fund that you invest, the ETF that you buy, doesn't know whether I recommend it or whether you saw it on Facebook or you threw a dart at the Financial Review one day. It will do what it does. The market will do what it does. The benefit of an advisor is that more of that return ends up in your pocket because you manage your emotions and behavior, and you don't let short-term declines in the market get in the way. You know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to invest $1,500 a month, which they keep doing while the market goes up. The market goes down, they stop doing it. And so they end up making less than the return the market gave. In fact, the numbers show that the average investor, this is a US number, but I'm pretty sure it's the same in Australia. The average investor in the US stock market makes 3.6% less than the market.
Wow.
Mostly due to this behavior that when the market's up, people pile in. When the market's down, they stop or worse, sell. And so people get less of the return that the market delivers. And so having the right advice makes much of that problem go away. Problem is, financial advice is so expensive in Australia. The average price of an advisor is, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year and going up very quickly. So our goal at Life Shaper was to be able to do that for under $600 a year. So it works out to be $1.50 a day.
That's amazing. Oh, I love it. I love it. And I'm curious to hear from you because now you're in your 60s and I think we have a lot of people listening to our podcast that are around, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, trying to set themselves up, trying to also set, you know, potentially future generations up as well. And I'm curious because, you know, you have a lot of life experience and you've worked in the space for a while. What are some things that you wish you knew when you were in your 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s? You know, like what are some things that you would tell your younger self or even younger people listening?
That's really interesting. And in fact, a lot of the things that mattered in the 80s and 90s, the rules and the guidelines that you might have used back then don't necessarily work today. So telling a 20-something graduate in 1983 that they should buy the biggest house they can afford was probably good advice, at least in hindsight, because if you borrowed a little bit too much, inflation came along, your pay went up, and the problem sort of – inflation cured a lot of those problems. Even though we've now had a little bit of inflation over the last year or so, it's unlikely that's going to solve the problem today. And so the old advice of buy the biggest house you can afford doesn't make sense anymore. So some of those rules of thumb that we get from our parents don't necessarily apply. But some of the basics still apply. You know, you still ultimately got to spend less than you earn. You've ultimately got to invest the surplus. It's probably a good idea to buy your home at the right time. And that's the right time for you. Like, don't worry about what the market's doing. It's, are you ready now? And not buy too much. So too much house and too much car are the biggest causes of financial stress that I see. So that's probably a bit of a historical context on it. But your 20s matter, and they matter more now than they ever mattered. So if you think about when we started work at 18, 19, 20, and we retired at 55, and we died at 65 or 70, that's a completely different dynamic than today. We're more likely getting into our careers in the late 20s. We're getting married around 30. We're buying a home mid-30s. So if 30 is the new 20 and you're not prepared to accept that 70 is the new 60, then you have to behave differently. And so the rules of the game have changed, and we need some new – well, the game's changed, so we need some new rules to play by. But the basics of spend less you earn, have an emergency stash, pay off your debts, get your super sorted, prepare for the unexpected, get your paperwork sorted, buy and pay off your home, and invest your surplus. None of that changes. The way we do it's changed. So, when I started investing in the stock market in the 80s, your stockbroker phoned you up every day and said, this is what's good today, and trading cost a minimum of 1%. I think there might have been £100 minimum as well. The government regulated the price of brokerage. And so you couldn't go and buy $500 worth of stock back then. It just made zero sense. In 1987, when the stock market collapsed, I was in Vienna and didn't speak very good German. So it took me 2 days to work out that the headline on the newspaper in German meant that the stock market just fell 40%. And, I had to go and find a radio and find the BBC World Service to find out what was happening. Whereas today, that's on your phone. So those things make a big difference, but the basics don't change. And your 20s do matter. In fact, there's a book, I don't know if you can put it in the show notes, there's a book called The Defining Decade by a psychologist called Meg Jay. She's American, I think, or Canadian, American. And she works with young people, 20-somethings generally. And it's not all about money, but it goes through relationships and education and where you live and points out how important your 20s are. And that by the time you get to 30, a lot of the habits that you're going to take with you have already been informed. We see this with music. People's taste in music tends to not change that much once you get past 30 or 40. We work at where we're going to live, which is where our friends live. So we start building up relationships and friend groups, and we get used to going to bars or wherever. So where you live, that starts driving where you want to live, which drives so much of your cost of living. So where we live, we start to look a bit like our neighbours. We go to shop in the same shops. Our kids go to the same schools. We buy similar cars. We holiday in similar places. So a lot of these money habits that we develop come from the people and places we hang out. And so getting those habits right in your 20s makes a huge difference. But I recommend that everyone under 30 should read this book. It's not a particularly long or difficult read. It's a series of stories about her clients. I accidentally found it at the bookstore in Gatwick Airport. I'd never seen this book before, but there's...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So you can't judge a book by its cover? Well, sometimes you can. And it just grabbed me. And I read it between there and Dubai. And ever since I've been recommending it to everybody. It's just one of those books that if you wanted a book to define the rest of your, how you think about living, that would be it. It's much more meaningful, much more insightful than a lot of straight money books. But it teaches many of the same lessons, but in a broader context around relationships, around where you live, what you do, and that we can't treat our 20s as downtime between finishing college and starting a real job. Sure, it's a great time to travel. It's a great time to experiment. It's a great time to move. It's a great time to do a lot of things. But it is the foundation for the rest of your life. And so it's really important that the things that you do align with what matters to you. So
that's
a big recommendation about what to do. My boy's just turned, he's 23 now, so he was never an academic. He struggled a bit in school, and he's finally got a job, moved to Melbourne, bought a house with no help from me, so it can be done. Admittedly, Melbourne's cheaper than Sydney, but not a lot, and he did get a whole bunch of COVID-era benefits from the Victorian government. But I had promised him, I said, look, if you can save 5%, I'll pay your lender's mortgage insurance bill. So if you can save 5% and convince a bank to lend you the rest, I'll pay your lender's mortgage insurance bill. But at the time, when he finally did it, he went, don't worry, Dad, I've got this under control. So it can be done. He's very frugal, which he probably doesn't get from me, to be perfectly honest. But because I do like, I'm not a good shopper, but I do like the finer things in life. And he just doesn't spend money.
Wow, that's
amazing.
So he's
amazing. Got a normal blue collar job. He's got a flatmate who rents two of his bedrooms. So it's the one piece of advice I did give him was a 5-year fixed rate mortgage.
Yeah,
which proved to be a winner at the time.
Oh,
not that
definitely.
I'm claiming any particular foresight. Other than they had to go up sometime.
Oh, my gosh, that would be amazing. I didn't even know that some banks did 5-year fixed rates. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's about as long as you can get in Australia.
Yeah, that's really good. What do you think, Pablo?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I guess in the US, I think you can go up to 30 years or like the whole loan. But here, I guess in Australia, 5 years, it was a good call, Vince.
I'm not claiming the ability to forecast the market. It was really just a view that certainty was more valuable than flexibility for him, and the government 3-year funding for the banks through COVID was going to stop someday. I had no way of knowing when, so it was just an on the balance of probabilities, because I don't like making predictions, and certainly when it comes to our members' financial planning, we don't make predictions. We would much rather you plan, prepare and protect. That is, you plan for what might happen, prepare for what you do if it did happen, and protect it where possible. And fixing rate is a bit of a protection. That the downside of it going up was much more serious than the potential benefits from it maybe going down.
Very true. And if you're enjoying this podcast so far, don't forget to give us a follow so you don't miss an episode. I have a question around budgets, because you have a really interesting framework that you recommend to clients on how to set up a good budget. And I'm curious to hear from you, like maybe you could tell our audience about, you know, your findings in the budget, the kind of like split that works, and how you see budgets and, I guess, people managing their day-to-day finances.
Cool. I mean, budgets have such a bad rap. They're a bit like diets. People just cringe when they see the word. But really, I think rather than being restrictive, a well-crafted plan, well, let's not call, I have to call it a budget, but a plan for your money that's aligned to your values and goals is actually liberating, because it stops you having to think, can I afford this? It stops you having to think, when's payday? It stops you having to juggle bills, and you can just get on with living life. That takes a bit of work, like actually understanding yourself and what really matters takes time, and it takes persistence. And you're not going to get this right the first time, and that shouldn't matter. But aligning your spending with what's important to you. We have a lot of members who love traveling, and that's such an important thing in their lives that they are prepared to trade off the house or apartment they live in, that they will buy a smaller house in order to be able to afford to travel more. Now, that's a trade-off that's not right for everybody, but it is for some people. Other people are so obsessed about having the right house because they have friends, you know, they have a lot of people over, they have family, the bigger, better house with the pool really, really matters. And they are prepared to trade off lots of other things to have that. And understanding those trade-offs. So that's probably step number one. Step number two is stop thinking about needs and wants. One of the biggest problems with most money books and most budgeting advice is it says separate your needs from the wants and deal with the needs first, and then and only then deal with the wants. And the problem with that is it forces you to, well, it creates guilt around spending that makes you feel good, and it also focuses the mind on the smaller things. So when you think about, if I divide my spending into needs and wants, the first thing most people think about is my daily coffee. Because it's small, it's obvious, it happens every day, that's the first thing they focus on. So that's why you'll see so many of these memes about the reason millennials can't afford a house is because they drink too much latte and eat too much smashed avocado. And there's nothing could be further from the truth. So rather than thinking about needs and wants, because all spending fulfills some need. So if you take your morning coffee, for example, the need it serves is clearly fluid and nutrition. And if that were all it was about, then an Nescafe at home is a perfect substitute. But actually that's not what it's about in most cases. It's about the routine on the way to work. It's the stepping out with your work colleagues at mid-morning. It's stress relief. It's the chat with the barista. It's the quiet time in the cafe while you sip your latte. For me, I stop on the way to work and read the paper all the time. So it was $3, now $4.50 for my long black is effectively the price for that quiet time in the cafe with the newspaper, so I can walk into the office fully prepared, knowing what's going to happen. So if someone says, "Did you see what happened overnight?" I've got the answer, and I've done it in a really stress-free way. That's not for everybody, but if you think about the need that it's fulfilling first, rather than thinking about it as a need or want. You probably heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which anyone who studied any psychology will know, that it starts off with physiological needs, which is food, water, fluid, warmth, and then moves up through things like acceptance, belonging, right up to self-fulfillment. And that's not a hierarchy of needs and wants. It's a hierarchy of needs. And so looking at our spending in the context of what need is this fulfilling and is there a better way to fulfill that need? So that's the first thing, stop thinking about needs and wants. And second thing is start where you are. So you can't start a budget plan by going, I read in this book that I should have 60% of my budget allocated to daily expenses without knowing where it's actually going. So if you want to change something, you've got to know where it is first and what of that bothers you. So start with where you are. There's lots of apps that will do this now. You can download your banking transactions and categorize them and work out what of that spending is working for you and which ones aren't. So you might find that you're spending buying two cups of coffee a day and it's not adding value to your life, in which case, sure, go ahead and cut one of those out or even both of them. But, let's focus on the big things first. So 40% of your spending is probably where you live and what you drive. So let's start there. So the really big ticket things, rent or mortgage, utilities, insurance, car payment, and potentially groceries, they're the big things. Whether or not you buy a coffee in the morning makes very little difference to your budget. And in fact, if you've ever gone and you've bought a house, you know what it's like. You're going to go to an open house. What does the agent say? They says, this apartment will sell in the low 700s. Now, what does that even mean? It means something between 710 and 750, as if those two are indistinguishable. Well, the difference between paying 710 and paying 735 will pay for a lifetime of lattes. So, let's make the decisions you only have to make once. So that's the second step. And then the third step is looking at this spending in the way it makes you feel. So I like to split spending into three categories. I've got chore spending, which is the stuff that doesn't spark any particular joy when you spend it. Nobody gets any joy about paying their electricity bill. Clearly, you'll notice that if you flip the light switch and the light doesn't go on, but there's no particular joy struck from that. So using less and paying less is a very easy decision to make and one that will make a big difference very quickly. And you're not going to miss any joy from doing that. And so chore really is around where you live, what you drive, insurance, utilities, food, debt payments. And then the next step thing I look at is what I call live expenses. Some people might call these smiles or splurges or wants, but it's really about how they make you feel when you spend it. And they're usually things like I categorize them as looking good, feeling good, going out, staying in. So looking good is around, you know, clothing, beauty, cosmetics, hair, feeling good, massage, going out to the pub, going to the theatre. So going out. And then staying in sort of hobbies and things that you do, like your Netflix or your cry cut machine or whatever it is that keeps you excited. And you obviously want most of your money to go to this space, or as much as possible to that space, because that's the stuff that makes life really feel like worth living. And then the final category I call it grow spending, which is really about achieving goals. Now, they're not necessarily big hairy goals about, you know, I want to retire early or I want to start a business. They could be as little as, you know, I want a holiday next year. So stuff that's generally not an every year thing. So it could be paying off your debts. It could be saving for your first home. It could be starting a business. It could be going overseas. It could be having a baby. It could be all sorts of goals that are meaningful to you, and it's moving money out of today's spending to tomorrow's spending. You'll all eventually get spent. It's just when you spend it. But that's the stuff that makes you feel like you're getting ahead. And so I call that the, you know, chore, live, grow. And a good benchmark, this is not a rule, so I don't treat this as a target, but a benchmark says if I'm 50% in the chore category, I'm probably going okay. It's pretty hard to keep it much below 40 unless you're living at home with mum and dad, which would be a good indication of why it should be less than 50. If you've just had a baby and you're off work and your income's come down, it's going to be a lot more than 50. If you've just bought a house, it might be a lot more than 50. But knowing that it's not 50 and why is actually the important analysis. There's no rule that says it has to be 50, but it's a good test. If I'm less than this, is there a reason and maybe I should be saving the difference? Is it over? If I'm over 50, is it temporary? Is there a reason why it is? Or have I just bought too much house and too much car? Then for the live, you want as much as possible in here, and 30 is a good target. And then the final one is grow, and you need enough here to make it feel like you're getting ahead. How much that is varies from person to person, but 20 is a really good number. And these are actually really important because I can sort of tell from the words people use where their problem is. So if someone walks into our office or our digital door and says, I make good money, I just don't feel like I'm getting ahead. Well, that's probably a sign there's not enough in the grow category, regardless of what percentage it is. It's not enough for them. And often that's a case of having too much chore. Sometimes it's a case of too much live, but that's rarer. And if someone says, there's just never enough money by the time I get to the end of the month, that's usually a too much live. So those words, listen to what you tell yourself about your money, and it'll tell you where some of these problems lie. So that's probably the two biggest ones. Don't expect to get it right the first time. You know, if you start with where you are today and then build a plan to gradually get towards where you think you want to be so that you've got a path, don't expect it to change overnight. You can change some of it by big decisions like refinancing your home loan, reviewing your insurance, getting a better phone plan or a better electricity plan. But the longer term, the bigger stuff will take longer to get right. So give yourself time and celebrate the wins as you go. It will go off the rails over time, either because your situation has changed. Yeah, you have a baby, you get married, you get divorced, you get a new job, your budget will change and it's time to revisit it. So they're probably the big lessons.
Yeah, I love that. It's really interesting. Speaking of budgeting, if you would like a completely free budget tracker, you can check one out down in the show notes below. Pablo and I have put a lot of work into this budget sheet and we hope you enjoy it just as much as we've enjoyed creating it for you.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I guess, like you said, like it's good to have these numbers as like benchmark, but everyone is different. So they will be different based on each of everyone's situations.
That's right. So if you're starting out and you've just bought a house, your chore is going to be hard because there's always something has to be done when you buy a house. If you're 50-something and your kids have finished school and you've paid off your home, well, your chore should now be a lot lower and you might want to be focusing more on the goal side because retirement's starting to get pretty close.
And you're going to even save on your gym membership.
That's right. But if you're 20-something and you're living at home with mum and dad, you would expect that your chore might be 10 or 20, depending how generous mum and dad are.
Very true. Oh, that's so lovely to catch up with you, Vince. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom. I guess before we close off, are there any, I guess, things that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, my day job is running Life Sherpa, which is Australia's most affordable financial advice service. You can find us at lifesherpa.com.au and go check it out, sign up for a free account and see if it's for you. You can find us on Instagram at My Life Sherpa. I think it's at My Life Sherpa and on Facebook.
Oh, thank you
and
so
I tweet
much.
Occasionally at VinceScullyAU.
While you're drinking your coffee and yes. reading your journal.
That's Aww. Right. And you'll find me occasionally on Reddit as SilverFox62.
Oh, I love it. Oh, thank you so much, Vince. And we'll put those links below in the show notes. Highly recommend checking Vince out and his business is great. It's also helped Pablo and I find the right insurance. And yeah, the team there is just really, really lovely. So it's really good.
Yeah, that was really good to have you on, Vince.
Well, thanks
for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Aww,
I love
so
the studio.
Much. Aww,
thanks.
Thank you. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.